So, in this week's parsha, we're doing the portion of Eschanan. And what's very special about this parsha is we have the 10 sayings, the 10 commandments, again in this parsha, repetition.
It's in the ear, that's what she
apologized. Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, starting with the first day of Shabbat, that's the Kislev Teves Shvat, that's the Tishrei Cheshvan Kislev Teves Shvat, that's the fifth month, from Rosh Chodesh Shvat until the seventh day of Adar, so it's about 2 months. He was he repeated for the entire Jewish people, recounting what took place the 40 years that they spent together in the desert and all the different encounters that they had. And one of the things that they had was the Torah was given at that time. Covenant. The Torah was given at that time. So we also have a repetition of the Ten Commandments. Oh, hi, how are you?
Hey, thank you for coming. I get those texts help.
Yeah.
My phone ran out of
it. So we have the Ten Commandments again. So let's talk about a little bit about the Ten Commandments. Usually they call them Ten Commandments, but they're really ten sayings. Aseres HaDibrot, there are 10 sayings. God spoke at that time. And we have to know that there's something unique that the Jewish people experienced at that time when God spoke to them. And there's a few things that when you pay attention, you see a few very important parts what took place at that time. You know, we know this was a one-time experience that the Jewish people experienced. It was when God, in front of all 600,000 people, said the 10 sayings, or actually it says the first two sayings we heard from God, and then eventually the rest we heard from Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Rebbe says, this is where the Jewish religion differs from all the other religions. And the fact is that the Jewish religion is based upon 600,000 people being there and the tradition given over. They were the presence in front of everybody versus the other religions, which people said they had a vision or something, but that was all in private. It wasn't a public display. But by Matan Torah, over there, this wasn't public. It was in front of all the people that were there in front of Torah. And the story of the tradition that took place, notwithstanding the fact that Jewish people are dispersed and all over in different countries, different places, and went through old sources, we have the same Torah. You know, there's no difference, the same story. There's no changes. That shows on the credibility of the Torah. But that's another point. It's not what I speak about today. What is interesting about the Torah was the way God spoke. So normally when you speak to a crowd, you speak to them in a plural, to speak to the people. So God was speaking to the Jewish people. What are the very first words that God says? God says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am God, your God. As if God is talking to each and every one of us. God did not say, like we say in the Shema, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am God, your God, which is the plural, but Anoichi Hashem Elokecho, I am your God individually, each individual. Individually. That basically means God was talking to us not as a group, but God was talking to each and every one individually. Now, of course, Rashi and the commentaries, they give various reasons why Hashem spoke in that way. Some Rashi brings down that was the defense for Moshe Rabbeinu. When God says, I should be your God, you should not make any idols. So Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jewish people made the golden calf and they worshiped the idols. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, you didn't tell it to, you told me, you said, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I'm your God, but you didn't tell it to them. Or other various different interpretations. But the very simple meaning is that God spoke to us, to each one individually. Now, let's think about it for a minute. You know, a lot of times when a parent, a teacher gives an instruction, okay, somebody take out the garbage, well, everybody passes it on to the other one and nobody does it. You know, it becomes Talmud says, Akadeta de Beishutvi, if you have a pot that belongs to partners, it's not cold, not hot, because nobody takes responsibility. It's partnership, so everybody passes along the buck. You have to tell them, Moshe, take out the garbage, you know? So then he knows that you're talking to them. But if we think about it, sometimes we think, well, God told the Jewish people, go ahead, you know, do the commandments. Oh, he told to all of us, all right, so. But what happens if God speaks to you directly? He says, you, each one of you, he says, go ahead, I am telling you, I am your God. You're hearing it from God himself. God is, it has a different impact on the person if you hear directly from God speaking to you. We say God. Okay, God is something which is supreme, beyond, something we don't see, that we don't know, we can't comprehend. But within not comprehending, there is all of a sudden, there is a connection between God, which we don't comprehend, telling us what to do. So what are we saying? We're saying God, who is beyond anything that we can even think of, is telling each individual human being, I want you, this is my command, this is my instruction to you. God himself is talking to you, saying, I am your God. You shall not have any other gods in my face. This is directly God talking to us individually. When we say God, there can be various levels of not understood comprehension. The Gemara says, makes note, the Talmud makes note of the Hebrew word of Anochi, which is the very first word of the Ten Commandments. I just quoted you a pasuk that we say every day in the Shema, in the portion of Tzitzit. We say, over there we say, Ani Hashem Elokechem, I am God, your God. But over there is two things. First of all, the word is Ani, and the word is Elokechem, it's a plural. But it's also not Anochi. What is the meaning of the word Anochi? I. Okay? You're knocking at the door. Right? Somebody, yes. Your wife says, your husband says, who is it? You say, it's me. I say, who's me? It's your uncle. You know, you say your name. But say, it's me. What do you mean when you say it's me? It's I. Who's I? I can be various different levels. I have my name, I have my intellect, I have my emotion, there's various parts to the I. Who is I? I, everything about me, I. That's just it. When Hashem says I, there's two Hebrew words to say it. Either Ani, or Anochi. Here God chooses the word and says, Anochi. What does Anochi mean? So the Talmud says, Anochi is actually an abbreviation of four words. Anochi means, Ano, Nafshi, Kesavis, Yehovis, which basically means, I, my soul. Imagine God talking about his soul. God is saying, I, my soul. I've written it, and I've given it. Basically, what Hashem is saying, the Torah that I'm giving you, that I'm instructing you, that I'm teaching you, that I gave a Matan Torah, the 10 sayings that I'm giving you, is not a lesser level. It is I myself, my soul, my elm, whoever God is in the highest level, I've written myself into the Torah and I've given it to you. So when I'm commanding you a mitzvah, when you're studying the Torah, you are not studying second tier, third tier, anything. You're talking Hashem himself. So now, here we have the extreme. We're talking an individual, one individual, and the most elevated level of Hashem is connecting and saying, I Hashem, I whoever, Anoichi, whoever I am, Anoichi Misha Anoichi, I am commanding you what to do. Of course, we don't necessarily feel that. I mean, if we felt that, probably we would do things differently. We read about it, we hear about it, but that's what the pasuk says: "Anoichi, I am Hashem Elokecha individually." There's an interesting pasuk over there when Moshe Rabbeinu describes this experience that we have by Matan Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, you heard a kol gadol. Kol gadol means a loud, a big. Gadol means big, a big voice. It's like maybe a loud voice, a great voice, a strong voice. Kol gadol. V'lo yosaf, did not end. Kol gadol, a strong voice without an end, without limitation, without finish. What does it mean, kol gadol v'lo yosaf? It was a strong voice that did not. The voice that you hear when Hashem said to you, I am God, your God, it was a strong voice that never ends. What does it mean that it never ends? The Rebbe quotes from the Midrash various different interpretations. One of them is that God's voice that he spoke at the time of Mount Sinai is not a voice that was one time at that time. But matter, that voice keeps on going and stretching out. When it means it's a long voice without any limitations, it means that that voice keeps on constantly coming to us. So we don't look back at it and saying, oh, it was a voice that was thousands of years ago when the Jewish people studied Matan Torah. Torah says, no, kol gadol v'lo yosaf. It's a large voice that doesn't stop. There's no limitations. It didn't end. It didn't stop at that time. Which means, in this case, it didn't stop, it wasn't bound by time, so it never ends. So that any time that we study Torah, any time we do a mitzvah, it's a continuation of that voice that we hear from Hashem. Hashem is always instructing us and always telling us continuously what we need to do. You know, throughout the ages, we've had prophets that have told us God's wishes. A lot of times they've came, they have warned us to behave better. We've also had many sages who have taught us, expounded the Torah, taught us whatever Hashem wants. Of course, we have to realize that when we talk about sages, that's also became a very cheap word sometimes. Who has the right? Who is a sage? Who has the right to interpret the Torah? But the true sages who are devoted servants of Hashem, who are teaching us Torah throughout the generations, their Torah is also a continuation of that voice of Hashem from Matan Torah. God's message to us continues. Certain things come out at certain times. To me, to us, you know, the Rebbe's voice that we heard, that the Rebbe would encourage people, would teach people, would help people, that wasn't a voice just of the Rebbe's, a sage who studied the Torah. We look at the sages as a continuation of that voice that we heard in Har Sinai when Hashem says, It's a voice that doesn't stop. It needs to say that all of our teachers and all of our rabbis and all of the people that will be instructing us, they are continuing that message that we heard on Matan Torah. It's not a new message. God brings the message down at the proper time. Just like we see in the world of medicine, for example, there are certain medications that we figured out today that we didn't know many years ago. But those medications also came about with the new sicknesses that have been developed over the years. As you know, there's bacteria, there is the sicknesses, there's cancers, there's other sicknesses. It wasn't as prevalent in the olden days. We're always coming up with new medicines for new sicknesses that are plaguing the present. People ate healthier, they breathed healthier air, the atmosphere was a lot healthier conditions. They didn't have those sicknesses. Today, with medicine, people live longer. There's more than in the previous generation. There's longevity. With it comes new medical issues and medical problems that develop. But medicine finds ways to deal with it. But just like we have medicine in the physical world, we also have the emotional and the mental health, as we know. And we also have the spiritual health, the health of our souls. And the words of Torah is the medicine, that's the vitamins, that is the energy that energizes us spiritually. So Hashem chooses, based upon the right generation, the time that you live in, He chooses the right medicine and He brings you the right leaders. He gives you the right prophets and the right sages and the right people to be able to combat, to be able to overcome the new spiritual
challenges
that plague us. And they sort of provide for us with that medicine, that spiritual medicine that we need. But that's not a something new. That is a continuation from that voice that we heard, that Kol Godol V'lo Yasof. It's a continuation of that voice. And it also has that power of Hashem, Ano Nafshi K'Sovis Yehovis, that power that came in Hashem's words. So it's not just a prophet telling us something or a sage telling us something, which in a way, okay, he's telling it to everybody. And therefore, how are we going to treat it? Okay, we have to listen to it because we are part of the community. No, we're listening to it. It's like Hashem telling you directly. He's saying to you, this is my message to you. It's not the prophet's message. It's not the sage's message. It's God's message. God's message coming through the sage, coming through the prophet. And God is talking to each of one individually. He's speaking to us individually and He's saying to us, listen to the call, listen to the message, listen to the voice. That is that same voice, that Ano Nafshi, that powerful voice that you heard over there speaking to you individually. That's there too. There's yet another interpretation. The other interpretation talks about it was a voice that wasn't limited to the Hebrew, to the Holy Tongue, to Lashon Kodesh. It was a voice. Here we were talking before about it wasn't limited to the time frame. Now we're talking about it's not limited to the language. It's not limited to the language in which it was spoken. Which basically means that the Torah instruction needs to be and is given over and has the ability for all various different languages. Hashem's words comes out in all different languages. The Rebbe gives two possible explanations to this. I'll use the second one for our purposes. The Rebbe says, when we were having a class over here, and we used the English language to speak the class, or furthermore, when you're going out there and you're going doing on your business on a regular your activity, you have a job, you're working at your job or you're at home, but you're using your words, bless you, using your words, you're using your language, and you're not using Hebrew, and you're not even studying Torah. But the language that you're using is something which is filled and is guided by the rules of the Torah. So that you don't speak Lashon Hara, you don't speak evil tongue, you don't say words that are hurtful to another person, you don't cheat, you don't lie, you live, you use the other words that you're using. You're using your Torah ideals in your daily life, which means you're not studying Torah now. You are specifically doing something else. But yet, while you're doing something else, you're using all the knowledge and the behavior and what you've learned from the Torah, how to interact with people, how to treat people, how to speak to people. You're using those Torah messages and you bring it out in your daily life. That also is saying that there's not limited just to the message of Torah, just but in all languages, whatever you're doing. And of course, when we study Torah and we use the English language, with one of the major things today we know is the availability and the opportunity for everyone to be able to reach into the literature of the Torah, which was basically only those who can read Hebrew were privileged to be able to understand and learn Torah. But today we have all the translations, we have all the books, we have on the internet, we have so much more accessibility and possibilities, the opportunities that are limitless. Those words of Torah that we study, according to this interpretation, is Lo Yosef. The Torah is not limited just to the Hebrew and to the study of Torah. It's an expanding of the Torah. It's an expanding of the Torah in a further way. It actually, when we do other activities and we are able to transform our daily mundane activities to bring God into the world, you know, because when you behave properly and people see that you behave properly and you do your things in a decent and an honest in a way, you are actually making the world into a better place where God can dwell, where God can be, which God's presence can be felt. So what you're actually doing is you are transforming also the world. And we call them in the Kabbalah, we call them sparks. So everything has a spark. Some things have holy sparks. You can tell that they're holy. Okay, when you use words of Torah, you're using the siddur to pray, those are holy sparks. You're in the shul, a holy place, that's holy sparks. But when you're outside, you don't see necessarily holiness over there. Those sparks are sort of, everything has a holy spark in it, but it's hidden. There's a Talmudic expression which says that the Jewish people have been sent to exile so they can bring back converts. What does that mean? Literally would mean, so if other people that they are exiled will see the Jewish religion, they may decide to join. So they are actually bringing back converts. But in the deeper sense, not talking literally about converting, but it's talking about converting the spark which is caught up in mundane things and elevating it and converting it and making it into a holy spark, into an openly holy spark. To take the very physical, the very mundane, take all those sparks that are around us, make them, convert them, make them into gerim, convert them, bring them into the Kedusha. How do we do that? By dealing with all our worldly needs and all of our physical matters in a proper, in a gentle, in a truthful, in an honest, in a good way. We take those sparks and we make them holy. We bring them up and we use those items that we do eventually to study Torah, to do mitzvahs, to give tzedakah, anything we use it for positive things. Then we've converted those sparks. So that's another thing. It goes out, the Torah starts with the Hebrew, but it expands to all the languages, to everything. We study in other languages, we do other things, and yet we are able to bring them back. And then there is a third interpretation, which seems a little bit surprising. The third interpretation is, it says, so far we said like this, it was a voice that A, continues on in time for all times. It's a voice that continues in all languages. And now we're also going to say it's a voice that has no echo. Now normally, one would expect, if you have a kol gadol, you have a large voice, then you have a big echo. It's only a small voice, a low voice doesn't have. How would it be a kol gadol would not have an echo? And why would God make it? What does it mean that it doesn't have an echo? What does that mean? And the Rebbe explains, how does an echo, how does a voice bounces off, just like light bounces off. When light travels, it hits a place that it cannot go into, it bounces back. The voice, when it goes to a place which stops it, which doesn't allow it for it to absorb, the voice will come back. That's how you get an echo. An echo means, essentially, that there is something blocking, that there's something interference. There is an interference that doesn't allow for the expansion for it to keep on going out. Rebbe says a very powerful and very interesting lesson over here. Rebbe says what it means that it was a kol gadol, a large voice, v'lo yosef, which means nothing could stand in the way of God's voice. There was nothing blocking it. There was no echo. What it means to say, it wasn't a supernatural. It was actually a natural experience. The reason why naturally we have a wall blocking it, because the voice isn't strong enough to penetrate the wall. Because the wall blocks it, doesn't let it go in. But if you have such a strong wall that nothing can stand in front of it, that will penetrate. Rebbe says, God's voice at the time of Matan Torah was so powerful, it was so strong, that nothing stood in the way. Nothing stood in the way of Hashem's voice. It penetrated, it went into all the physical matters as well. Rebbe says, when we learn Torah today, the walls, it's a kol gadol, they are absorbing some of that words that we talk, that we speak. If you talk Torah, if you do and you learn, the walls in your home are absorbed with Torah. It's interesting. Rebbe says, there used to be a tradition, some people wanted that their coffin that they're buried in should be made out of the wood of the table that they studied. Or they wanted their stender that they were standing by and learning, they wanted that the coffin should be made from what they studied on. Because they wanted them to be a testimony because of the words that were absorbed inside of the wall, in the wood should testify, because the wood has an absorption, because when you talk about Torah, there is that kol gadol v'lo yosef, there is that great voice that even penetrates through the wall. Brings down a story of the Yerushalmi, says about one of the rabbis, he had the stick of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was one of the great sages. He inherited the stick. He says the stick used to teach him Torah that the other rabbis wouldn't understand. So the rabbi said, what does it mean a stick going to teach you Torah? How does a stick teach you Torah? He says, well, the stick that was there absorbed from the Torah that Rabbi Meir was learning, and that sage, that older fellow, that Zokin who had the stick, to him it was revealed, which to most people is not revealed, the Torah that was in the stick. So somehow the Torah that was in the stick also came out to the open. There is Torah actually inside the walls, inside the stick, inside the wood. However, it's hidden, it's not open. And that's why, you know, there is laws, like you have to behave in a shul or you behave in a home. in a shul, it's more openly the holiness. The house is not. In the rooms, there could be less. There's differences. But yet, deep down in the walls and everything, everything is absorbed. There is an absorption of Torah. That's Kol Godol V'lo Yosaf. There is no... It says in the future, it says about when Mashiach will come, it says the walls, the stones in the walls and the wood in the... will say, will speak. There's an expression, Rebbe doesn't bring down over here, but in one of the Yom Yoms, the Rebbe says that if you walk on the steps and you don't do anything positive, you don't study words of Torah, he says the stones will yell out, or technically yell out, he says, why are you stepping on me? What makes you better than I am? You know, then if you're talking Torah, if you are behaving like a mensch, then you are on a higher level. But if you're not doing anything, why should you be stepping on me? What gives you the right? You're no better than I am, you know. I'm a piece of stone over there. The idea is that the words of Torah have no limit in this interpretation. The words of Torah penetrate and go through. You know the famous story of Rabbi Akiva, which we said many times. Rabbi Akiva was a very great sage in the end, and he had a very good heart. And he wanted to study, but it was very simple. He knew very little. And he could never believe that at his age, he'll be able to sort of start over again. He didn't think that he could start over again. So, but one time he saw this drip on a rock, and he saw that it indented in the rock. It was going for many years. He said, if a drip, which is soft water, stone, which is hard, words can penetrate, make it a dent. So the words of Torah can make a dent in my heart. But that's on the external level. Here we're talking about the word of Hashem going inside the heart, inside the wall, inside every. Rebbe explains like this. What is the lesson? You know, physical and spiritual, really, how does spiritual go into physical? It doesn't match. They're opposite. You can't, physical, it's not on the same plane, you know. This is here and this is there. They're not on the same level. Spiritual is one level, physical is another level. You can't bring them together. That's why when we bring a soul and a body together, it's like mafli lasi. This is God's wonders, brings them together, you know. Physical and spiritual really can't connect. In order to connect the physical and the spiritual, you need to involve godliness. Godliness, which is not limited, not by physical, not by spiritual, to him, physical and spiritual are really not a contradiction. Anoich Hashem Elokecha, when you have godliness, you can accomplish to bring down the spiritual into the physical, because to God, at that level, you're not just talking about physical and spiritual. You're talking about godliness. Godliness can bring and have the spiritual and the physical combine and be together. The human being also has, in a certain level, these categories that we talk about, the physical and the spiritual. The person's mind, his intellect, is called the spiritual part of him. The person's action are called the physical. That's the inanimate part. It's just the physical, just the doing. The idea is to bring that spirituality into your doing, into your simple actions, which you seem, doesn't seem like it's doing anything. You bring that spirituality into that physicality so that you penetrate your Torah into what you're doing. But that is, if it's godly. You make it godly if your Torah you're doing. If it's godly, then you consecrate and you make your physical, the very mundane, you make it spiritual, you make it holy, so that everything that you do actually is full with that spirituality without godliness of Hashem. To the extent, the Rebbe says, actually, he says, when you study something, it's amazing. He says, when you study something, then if you bring in the godliness of the study, then it doesn't stop, you don't forget. Normally what we do is when we study something, you know, come to the next class, what did we speak about last class? I forgot already. Okay, so you forget. That means what? That it stops. It's a koil gadol, but it stops. It's Yosef. If you want it to be a koil gadol velo Yosef, you want it to be a voice that doesn't stop, which means you don't forget. You know, what does forgetting mean? As the Gemara says, if you are living with it, then it stays with you. You don't forget it. You don't lose it. It stays. There's no hefsek. There's no interruption. It keeps on going. And I guess if we study Torah, and we don't just study intellectually, but we study it with the proper holiness, with the proper respect, and with the proper attitude, that this is holy, and this is godly, and this is spiritual, and this is our way of connecting to Hashem, so then we have the ability to take all of our physical matters and actually elevate them so they get penetrated. Even though they're physical, they're still penetrated. And it's important to know to us that what we do, I mean, it seems like from what we just said now, from the Rebbe's words in this thing, that only the holiness gets into the wall. But the bad things we do, they just stay outside. They don't get absorbed into the walls. I mean, that
they just echo, so we hear them. No.
Okay, they bounce off. Yeah. We don't. So I'm not sure about that. But from this, it seems it's the kol gadol, that Hashem's voice, continuous voice. So that's a blessing for us to know that the walls of our home, how important it is for the walls of our home. And the Talmud talks about being modest even in the house, because in front of the beams, in front of the walls, you know, so there's talks about various different things. So there is a lot about it, but this idea of absorbing actually in the wall, and you know, in dishes we have, that's why, you know, when you cook something not kosher in a pot, let's say, if it's not kosher, it goes into the walls of the pot. That's why you have to kosher the pot, so to take out what it absorbed in it. So, but I'm just thinking over here, it doesn't absorb so much. But it's interesting, like when Hashem brought the flood, it said that even that the earth was corrupt, that the corruption actually, the negativity of the people of the generation was so bad that even three tefachim of the Machareshah, Rashi says over there, three tefachim of the depth in which the plow goes, also had to be. So Hashem sort of took off a layer of, you know, it's like a bad potato, you got to peel away. So, and not just to peel away the garbage over there, you peel away like a few little, some more pieces over there. So it seems like even on the bad side, sometimes it can penetrate inside into the ground as well. But over there, maybe it's the ground, not so much in the walls. Over here, it's in the walls. I'm not sure how to take this, you know, into other extremes. But it's good to know that when we do a mitzvah, and we have a physical place in which the mitzvah still stays, that we can say, oh, wow, it stays over there. This was one of the reasons also that the Rebbe gave. In my days, you know, the neighborhood where we lived was going down very quickly. You know what happened to many Jewish neighborhoods all over. You had one black person move into the block. I'm not sure I'm allowed to say the word black person. You know,
African American.
Person of color, sorry. Person of color, be correct. So if a person of color moved in, but that's a reality. I'm not saying that it's right or wrong. I'm just saying these are the facts that happened. That a person of color would move into the community, would move into the Islam, and then the whole block ran over as soon as sold out, and everybody was afraid. They were trying to sell quickly because the prices, the value of the homes went down, and everybody wanted to quickly sell, so you know they can you know, get a better price for their property. And in Crown Heights, where I grew up, the same thing happened. People of color started moving in, and the neighborhood was going down. It was very dangerous at the time also. It was one of the Rebbe's...
Yes.
Dorchester. Oh, all these places. Mattapan,
Dorchester,
all these places, yeah. But the Rebbe showed for the first time. Rebbe says, no, we're not going. One of the reasons the Rebbe said, all the shuls and all the homes that have absorbed so much Torah and so much Yiddishkeit and so much holiness, we're not going to give it away to the... to other places, especially to make them into other religions and other things. We're not going to do that. When we're there, Rebbe, one of the arguments was the walls are holy. It's not just those are the walls that have been penetrated with so much good deeds, with so much Torah, with so much learning, with so much davening, with so much kind deeds and all stuff. We're going to just, no. Rebbe changed the tide. Today, you can't afford to buy a house there.
Yeah.
It's cheaper to buy here than buy over there.
Your neighborhood, it's very expensive now?
Very expensive. It's you know rents and there's no end there still. And it's going only one direction. It's going up. You remember that?
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking in the 1960s.
Yeah.
In the 1960s, that's what I'm talking about.
Yes.
And then it changed.
The time after Luther King.
Yeah. After, and they started making all kinds of riots and everything else.
Decided to make out, like, be better.